It's the California Wine Country Podcast with Steve Jackson and Dan Berger. We taste, we laugh, we learn.
California Wine Country with Dan Berger. He's on vacation for a couple weeks, and it's always great to have Tom Simino, the original Sonoma County wine guy. I know that because I named him that in 1992 on the radio.
1992?
Right here on KSRO.
5, 6 years ago? Was that what it was?
Yeah.
Seems like.
We were 6, and you were 8 years old when we started that show in the early 90s.
Right. Yeah.
It is California Wine Country brought to you by Bottle Barn. Today, Tom is featuring Jesse Katz, winemaker at Aperture Cellars and Devil Proof Vineyards. Jesse, great to see you again. You said like 5 years?
I think it's been about 5 years, but wonderful to see you guys again.
Yeah.
And what a 5 years it's been for this gentleman.
Yeah, so, I mean, let's get there. First off, the story that I was rereading today about your dad, Andy Katz, who is one of the most iconic, beloved photographers in our area. Explain the whole story behind the winery and how it all got started. Your dad's a photographer.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if you look at all of our labels, which obviously no one on the radio is able to, I use his imagery as our front labels. And so it's very kind of it's an homage to him and kind of a link between the art that is wine and winemaking and then the art that my father has created. And also really the reason why I got into the wine industry. I'm a kid from Colorado originally, and I was fortunate enough traveling all over the world, not just wine regions, but when I was about 12 years old on, he started doing books on wine regions. He's now done 15 books, 9 of them on different wine regions, but being a kid in Colorado, I was fortunate enough to live in Tuscany and Burgundy and Bordeaux, traveling the world with my family.
I thought those places were in Italy, not Colorado. I didn't
Southern Colorado.
Way southern.
Thank you. Wow.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's such a great story.
Yeah.
There's a great photo of you on your one of your websites that you are you probably 12 years old or something?
Yeah, with my father. Yeah.
I was, somewhere in Burgundy or wherever they
exactly, in the middle of a vineyard. And well, what's so great about that, out living in the old world, which I think is a flaw that we have out here, but they introduce wine to people. If you're old enough to sit at the dinner table, they'll introduce it to you as a food from 12 years old on. And so I really got to know wine through food and through culture, living in France and Italy and those type of places. And so wine was always a special special thing to me, and I was fascinated, especially early on. We lived in Burgundy for a while. That it was quite easy for me to understand that all the red wines were Pinot Noir and all the white wines were Chardonnay, but how vastly different it would be from village to village. And so that kind of whole element of terroir, which I didn't know how to articulate at the time, was very, very interesting to me. And yeah, never in my wildest dreams did I think I was going to be a winemaker, though, at the time, because it seemed like, especially in the old world, it had to be within your bloodline. Mm-hmm. Passed down generation to generation.
We've always heard that.
And a kid from Colorado was never going to be a winemaker. So I left Colorado and went to business school originally in Santa Barbara when I was 18, but still fascinated with wine. I knew it was going to be part of my life, not necessarily as a profession. And I got a summer internship at Fess Parker Winery when I was 18 years old. And I was, you know, cleaning floors and doing the...
No, I haven't heard that name and that winery name in a long time. But
Fess was still around when I was there, too.
Yes, and we forget. We tend to forget that there was a Fess Parker winery.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I had my coonskin cap.
Yeah, they sold them in the taste room.
Yeah, I know. Damn. So he was still – is Fess Parker Winery still around?
Fess, absolutely. And it's actually – it's one of the kind of prominent wineries out there, and his son Eli has been doing a wonderful job with the brand. So, you know, it was one harvest for me. So, like I said, I was kind of the grunt there, and I was – essentially cleaning the floors, but trying to follow around the winemaker and the viticulturist as much as possible, and made my way throughout the summer up into the lab and then more and more into the vineyard. But the key thing for me at the time was that I saw that people actually had degrees in viticulture and enology, words that I had never heard about or my previous counselors had never told me
Davis
about.
Or
I got into Davis and Fresno, decided to go to Fresno because they had a full working winery on campus.
At the time.
Now Davis does as well, but at the time it was just Fresno.
Right.
And so went there, worked at the winery, got my degrees in viticulture, enology, and chemistry, And at that time, I'd really fallen in love with Bordeaux varietals. And so essentially from there on, my whole focus was to surround myself with the best wineries, the best vineyards, and the best estates that I possibly could work with, just to kind of learn as much as possible.
And he did.
And that's what exactly.
Name a few of them, Jesse.
So as soon as I graduated from Fresno, I went over to Argentina, and I was doing two vintages a year. Our winter, I'd go to the Southern Hemisphere, and I worked for the Argiano family and the Sassicaia family of Italy. They had a little winery or two wineries in Patagonia, Argentina, called Bodega Naomia and Bodega Chakra. These are world-class wines. You know, the Malbecs sell for a few hundred bucks a bottle, and their dry farm biodynamic Pinot Noirs are absolutely spectacular from Bodega Chakra. And then I came back, and I worked for Bob Foley. He was the winemaker for Pride Mountain for many, many years, and I was working on his own projects. Robert Foley, Hourglass and Switchback Ridge, really unique wines up in the middle of Howell Mountain. Worked back in Argentina for Paul Hobbs at his own winery at Vina Cobos.
Paul Hobbs, we hear that name a lot.
Yeah, it was a wonderful experience, still a friend today. And these are, you know, I think the vintage we were there was the highest rated Malbec to come out of Argentina. And these are now $300 or $400 bottles of Malbec. And then I came back and I was at Screaming Eagle until 2010. And at that time, David Ramey, who was the consulting winemaker at Lancaster Estate at the time, recruited me from Screaming Eagle.
David Ramey.
Yeah.
Been with us before.
Well, great, great mentor and friend David is. And he brought me over to the Sonoma side for the first time. Well, I had worked with fruit in Sonoma, but really the first time. And I was the director of winemaking at Lancaster Estate and Roth. Until I left to really focus on my own projects, Aperture and Devil Proof.
And that's where I ran into Jesse.
Yes.
I sold my grapes to Jesse in 2010.
Absolutely.
And I'll tell you, I've sold to, I don't know, maybe 20 different wineries over the years. I have never walked the vineyard more than when I was selling grapes to Jesse. And it was 2010 harvest.
Yeah.
Which was a very challenging harvest, to say the least.
Yeah, I remember.
And Marcelino, my field hand, right, Jesse would come over and we were pulling leaves and then dropping green fruit because it was a cool summer. And then we got the heat in the fall and sunburn. So we're dropping more fruit. Finally, right at the end of the season, just before we picked, Marcelino said to me, Tomas, Jesse, come by one more time. I cut him. He was going to cut his throat.
I spent a lot of time in the vineyard.
Oh, man.
That's where most of my time is focused.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And so that's where I met Jesse, and I've been dying to have him back on the show. And, boy, you've been doing so many great things, and we're going to be able to tell everybody about him as we proceed. Should we talk a little bit about this Sauvignon Blanc?
We shall after I ask another question.
Sure.
Fess Parker. I was a kid and had a coonskin cap.
Right.
And all of my friends had coonskin caps. We were like 9 years old, Fess Parker. Or am I thinking of the Davy Crockett guy?
Same.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Well, so Hold on.
I'm very old now. do they still sell coonskin caps at Fess Parker Winery and Vineyard?
It was a long time ago when I was working there, and they did at the time. Can't tell you currently.
Did you have to wear the coonskin caps when you worked there?
I did not. Not part of our sanitary protocol.
My mother threw mine out once.
Well, she said it was too stinky. Sounds like you need to go back to Santa Barbara.
Are you kidding me? That's how I wound up in radio and doing a talk show. I'm a metal midget here. I mean, it's she, you know, really gave me a turn. Where's my Fess Parker thing, the coonskin cap?
Yeah.
Should I be quiet now?
Yeah.
Everyone apparently is telling me to shut up. Yes. Okay, so this is a Sauvignon Blanc.
Yeah, what, so
17?
This is a 16. I brought our first vintage of the Sauvignon Blanc that I ever made under Aperture. And I really wanted to make a different style. And I think when I popped the bottle and started pouring it for you all were like, this is quite different than a lot of Sauvignon Blancs I've had.
I agree. I said off air, this is one of the most unique Sauv Blancs I've ever tasted.
Yeah,
my
Sauvignon Blanc winemaking was really sculpted from my time in Bordeaux. I was fortunate enough to work at Petrus on the right bank of Bordeaux, so more Merlot. They don't make a white wine. But during that time, my father was doing a book on the first gross of Bordeaux and spending a lot of time on the left bank. And before we had any fruit coming into Petrus, I was fortunate to study and observe the winemaking of Aubryon and Chateau Margaux and some of the other great wineries out there, and really had a newfound appreciation for the white wines and their white winemaking style, the white Bordeaux. And these wines, you know, the Aubryons are $800 a bottle, or sometimes more expensive than their reds. But, you know, these are averaging $100 a bottle for their white wines. Are wines that are meticulously farmed in the vineyard, are in the winery. They really do specific press cuts, and so they're doing lighter pressing, and then they're barrel fermenting these wines and spending a lot of time stirring the barrels and really kind of meticulously crafting these wines. And they're absolutely world-class because they have so much richness to the wine, but still true to the varietal, the Sauvignon Blanc, all that really, really bright, crisp acidity. So when I came back to California, started searching for a vineyard. This is Dry Stack Vineyard, which is one of the great vineyards out in Bennett Valley. I make a wine for the owners as well called Estate, which is a single vineyard wine from that. I blend in a little bit of Semillon in mine just to kind of really keep it true to the Bordeaux style. But this is a 100% barrel fermented Sauvignon Blanc, a third new French oak, a third once used barrels, and a third neutral. Batonnage, we're stirring the barrels throughout fermentation, and then every month afterwards, it sits in barrel for about 9 months. And I got so obsessive over this, as Tom knows, I get pretty obsessed with the craft of winemaking, that we even had barrels shipped over from Aubryon over here because I couldn't find those specific barrels. And those barrels happen to be the French oak bodies, so the staves are all made out of French oak, but the heads of the barrels were toasted acacia wood. And I couldn't find those barrels anywhere over, so I had them shipped over, and 10% of the wines were aged in those barrels.
Good grief.
What does the acacia do?
It adds a really interesting spice, kind of lifts the fruit, shows more minerality.
You know, because this is so unique to me.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. And the Semillon, you said 10%?
Yeah.
That really rounds it out, man.
Absolutely. That oily texture of the wine. So all those different elements.
This is dry. This is crazy. I'm really, and I've, you know, gotten into Sauvignon Blanc a lot.
Mm-hmm.
On this show between
thank you,
you know, Ben Pearson and Dan Berger and yourself.
Sure.
This is special. This is different. And Tom, give me the whole rundown.
The wonderful thing about this is, I mean, right now, you know, a lot of people think when they think Sauvignon Blanc, they think New Zealand and that big green bean, you know, peas.
All stainless steel fermented.
Yes.
No, quick to bottle.
Creamy, real, you know, screw cap, tight. Acidic, and I like that style, but I also like this creamy, buttery, round, rich. The mouthfeel in this is terrific, but the acidity is right there.
Yeah.
It's perfectly balanced. Stirring the lees really gives you that creaminess.
Yeah, and exactly. It's creamy, but still has that rock and acidity to kind of tie everything together.
Especially in the finish. But, you know, in the middle of the mouth, it is so creamy for a Sauvignon Blanc. I love this.
It goes through your palate, the finish
it starts changing.
Crisp, dry.
Yeah.
And has a bit of minerality.
Yeah, because this is bone dry, so it's a dry wine, but there's so many layers of richness and complexity to this wine, and we've certainly gone past that kind of green, grassy style that New Zealand is very famous for, and there's certainly wonderful wines coming out of that area, but they have their place, which is quite different from what I was trying to make. And this is much more tropical. You get peach, melon, and get more of those kind of citrus notes and away from that green notes.
I love this.
But at the same time, the complexity is such that even though it's a little bit of a, not really a warm region, but a kind of a cool warm region there in Bennett Valley, you don't get that. Some of the warm region Sauvignon Blancs that are out there, especially the ones that are barrel fermented, can have a little cloying character.
Yeah, and they can be a little clumsy at points.
Yes.
This is Bennett Valley, where this specific vineyard is. The days will get warm, but those nights really cool down.
I live in Bennett Valley, and yes, I can attest to that.
And that wind that comes through every single evening.
Yep.
Yeah, so this is a really late sight. Sometimes I'm picking the Sauvignon Blanc with our first of our Cabernets from Alexander Valley even.
Wow.
And so we get amazing kind of phenolic and rich flavors coming from how long the hang time is on for this vineyard site. But at the same time, this acidity, all natural. I've never acidified any of these wines. And so you're able to kind of keep that brightness and the freshness in the wine from those cool nights.
All right. It's 521, of course. Bottle Barn presenting, as we have for the last 10 years, California Wine Country with Tom Simino today. In for the vacationing, Dan Berger. I want to talk about Devil-proof vineyards and more about Aperture Cellars with the winemaker Jesse Katz, who is just an amazing young man.
I know. He's like a two lives in 30 years.
Unbelievable. And I want to talk about his father, Andy Katz, and his photography and all his books and stuff, too. And we will get back to that in a moment. By the way, Chris DiMatteo, who is an associate producer for my company, Vicario Productions, in L.A., he heard the Fess Parker thing, and now he said, Fess Parker lived around the block from us in Sherman Oaks when I was a kid in the late 60s.
Well, Fess Parker's getting all kinds of play here on the radio today, isn't he?
I want one of those coonskin caps again. Damn it, I'll wear it every day.
So, you know, I'm getting this vibe here. I think I'm going to give Fess Parker a call, and we'll see if we get their winemaker up here in the next few weeks.
Let's do it.
What do you think?
And they're Central Valley?
Yeah, they're
Central
up in San Ynez.
Yeah, okay.
About 45 minutes outside of Santa Barbara.
Wow.
Yeah.
I do vaguely remember that there was a Fess Parker winery.
Eli, I hope you're remembering this or hearing this, and send a few hats if you can hear this.
Yes. I need some coonskin wine caps.
His are getting stinky. Many of the single vineyard wines are allocated, but we have our Alexander Valley Cab Blend and our Sauvignon Blanc, both available at Bottle Barn.
So, and the price, ballpark?
This will be right around $35 for the Sauvignon Blanc. Our cabs are right around $70.
Got it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Can you believe he's got his wines at Bottle Barn? I mean,
no,
everybody's
great.
At Bottle Barn.
And, well, they should be.
That's right.
And they will continue to be. I want to get into the name Aperture, although it's obvious because of your dad.
And once you see the labels of the photos. But
The labels are so cool.
Yeah, Aperture. I love the name because there's a lot of different connotations that go with it. Aperture is the part of the lens that opens up and closes depending on what you want focused on. And I think that a lot of that overlays with winemaking and what you're focusing on. And certain winemakers focus on different things than others. And our focus is broad, certainly on some things, and very, very focused on others. As Tom will tell you, in the vineyards, that's certainly one of the areas that we're very, very focused on.
Yeah.
And so kind of all the different things and having that partnership with my father with this wine was why we decided to call it Aperture.
Okay, we have a lot more to talk about.
Yeah.
Today our guest is winemaker Jesse Katz from Aperture Cellars. We're going to talk about Devil Proof Vineyards coming up and more about Aperture. Let's kick off this segment before we start talking about your dad, Andy Katz. Aperture, and we know why the name, because that's a hip underground photography lingo kind of thing.
Combining art of wine and art of photography.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
I like the name. This is a 2016. It just says red wine, soil specific.
Yeah, so this is our Bordeaux blend. It's a blend of Merlot, Cabernet Franc, Cabernet Sauvignon, and and Malbec.
Wow.
So four of the five red Bordeaux varietals. There's no Petit Verdot in this. And this is all from Alexander Valley. And when putting blends together and picking new vineyard sites, there's four different vineyards that go into this. I really wanted to go beyond the specificness of looking at one region and go deeper and look at certain soil types. So the only vineyards that I'll work with for this specific wine, which is really more focused on kind of the right bank Bordeaux style, the Merlot, Cab Franc is kind of the dominant forces here, are clay loam soils. And so we only work with the vineyard sites that have clay loam soils, which is different from our
clay loam.
Yes, so clay that clay will hold a little bit more water than your classic gravel, and so it will keep the soils a little bit cooler. It will lengthen the growing season. You've got to be cautious because if it's holding too much water, you can have an excessive canopy or nutrient issues. But clay is phenomenal for varietals like Merlot and Malbec, as long as you can get some drainage out of the soils as well. And so a lot of these sites, we really limit the irrigation due to the soil types. But what my main focus is controlling the canopy size, the amount of fruit on there, and then also lengthening the growing season so we can get these really ripe, rich tannins that kind of make the texture that we're tasting within this wine right now.
So when do you pick? Basically this one is a 16, right?
Yeah, you guys are the first to taste this wine. No one has had this wine. We're releasing our 16 red blend and our Cabernet at the end of the month to our wine club members.
We won't tell anybody.
Bricks are really of course, I'm monitoring them throughout the season, but it's really not my determining factor of picking. So it's very vintage specific on when we're picking as far as Brix goes. I'm picked Alexander Valley and Sonoma in particular because we're able to get similar ripeness in tannins and phenolic levels that I'm seeing on my consulting clients in Napa, but at lower Brix.
Lower Brix here.
Here, yeah. Absolutely, mm-hmm. Because the cooler nights. We have much more of a coastal influence because there's not the Mayacama Mountains blocking that. And so our diurnal swings, our temperature.
Okay, that's a geek alert.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there, you,
what exactly is that?
It's the difference between daytime temperature and nighttime temperature. If it's 90 during the day but 50 at night, that's a 40-degree swing. As a diurnal measurement.
Yeah, and so yeah, exactly. So essentially, how cool it gets from night to day, and
sometimes 50 degrees.
Exactly. That's the crazy thing about this region of many of these vineyard sites is it could get to 100 that day, but we might see temperatures that evening in the 50s.
Yeah.
And so with that, it lengthens the growing season, holds a little bit more of the acidity because all of these wines, I don't acidify any of them. I don't fine or filter any of them either. So it's really kind of truly showcasing the site that we're working with or the sites that we're working with for this.
How old are you now?
34.
I don't know if I've ever
this
seen.
Guy is, I know. This kid is I amazing.
I don't know if I've ever seen anybody blend based on soil type.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that, and they may be and have because a winery might have an estate, but I've never seen anybody take advantage of that and put it on a label. That's brilliant.
Well, anytime we're looking at a new vineyard site, one of the criteria is I really dive in deep to the soils and see which program it will fit into to make sure that we have a consistency year in and year out, even as we start to grow each program.
It brings a whole new thought to let's go kick some dirt.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
All right. It is California Wine Country. You can catch up on any episode at calwinecountry.com or wherever great podcasts are offered. CalWineCountry.com. So check it out. It is the California Wine Country podcast. Tom Simonos here, along with Jesse Katz, great winemaker.
This is a beautiful wine, your Bordeaux blend.
Thank you so much.
It's rich and full-flavored. It's a 16 vintage, so it's definitely way young.
Yeah, it's still a baby. Well, like I said, we haven't even released this wine
but
yet.
You know, the nice thing about it, too, is a lot of times when you get these big wines, you sniff it. And you're not smelling fruit first. You're smelling a lot of oak.
Yeah.
And didn't you say it's 50% new?
We aged this for just under 20 months in 50% new French oak.
Right,
exactly.
But the wine, the fruit itself can handle it.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And it screams Bordeaux varieties. Yeah. It's got a little of that Franc in there. It's that Malbec character to
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
kind of a Merlot-y thing going on.
Yeah.
Plush and rich.
It's very aromatic. There's a lot of floralness to kind of complement the rich fruit. It's a lot of the dark fruits in there and even some kind of the raspberry as well. And then on the palate, I will love this vintage and this wine because of the richness that you get on there, but also the silkiness of tannins.
Okay. I do want to talk about your dad, Andy Katz. Let me quote,
my old man.
Yeah, what a dude, man. let me quote this from the website. Never mind the 6 million album covers around the world that feature Andy Katz's photographs or his dozen books of gorgeous photos that grace countless coffee tables around the country. He's gotten many awards from 5 decades of work around the world. And his son is here with us, Jesse, and again, just for those of us joining us late, explain, let's talk about who your dad is and how he was instrumental in getting you into the wine world, and now you're a big-shot wine guy.
Extremely. Well, my father is my best friend. We still travel every year together, and he gave me the opportunity as a child growing up in Colorado to travel the great wine regions of the world and introducing me to wine through culture and through food and through art. And so when I started Aperture in 2009 with my father, I was at Screaming Eagle at the time, but this was a project that we wanted to kind of start as just a fun thing for the two of us to have together. That's where the brand Aperture and the concept of making something quite unique started.
And, Tom, your thoughts on Andy?
I mean, he's unbelievable. I probably have five of his books.
Yeah.
You know, and you pull them out and he's as good as they get.
And those are the books about wine and wine country?
They're photographs.
Photographs, yeah.
He's done 15, nine of them on wine regions.
Okay,
yeah.
That's what...
Yeah.
And what's his recent one? There was a Sonoma one that just came out a couple years ago.
It's a Sonoma, and actually the cover of the Sonoma book is the label of the wine that we're just getting ready to taste right now at the Cabernet Sauvignon. And he did a book on Sonoma with Jim Lobby from Wine Spectator on kind of some of the great sites within Sonoma. Beautiful coffee table book. And that he has one more recent book on the first growths of Bordeaux. It actually kind of morphed. It started with the first growths of Bordeaux, the five on the left bank. And he started working with Petrus and Cheval Blanc and Chateau Ozone on the right bank. And then he said he started to learn about this. It's a very unofficial term, but he kept on hearing it at all these great chateaus called the Club of Nine, which are the five first growths, those three mentioned on the right bank, Petrus, Cheval Blanc, and Ozone, and then Chateau Yquem in Sauternes. And so he ended up doing a book, the first one on the Club of Nine ever.
Somebody has not sent that to me, hey? Who's the publisher? We'll
the Club of Nine.
He is. That's the issue.
Oh, that's what it is. Okay.
Wow. No, what is this?
This is the Cabernet.
Yeah.
This is your 16 Cabernet Alexander Valley?
Yep. Another soil-specific wine. And with this specific wine, there's five different vineyards that go into it. And we're only working with red volcanic soils, kind of mostly in the eastern hillsides of the Alexander Valley. So we really wanted to showcase something. The reason why I love those soil types for this specific wine is the volcanic soils have very, very little organic material in them. So you get a little bit smaller vines. The hillsides help the drainage. And so you're able to kind of get the smaller clusters, smaller berries, and increase skin-to-juice ratio. So you have all this incredible concentration coming from the skins of the grape to make a very rich and style wine. But again, we're still on the Alexander Valley Sonoma side, one of the great wine-growing regions in the world, in my opinion. And so we're able to kind of get the textures that I think a lot of people love on the Napa side, but there's a little bit more elegance, freshness, and brightness than I think you typically find in most vintages.
There's a great difference between the first Bordeaux blend. Is this 100% cab?
There's a little barrel fermented Malbec in there.
Okay.
Yeah, 6%.
I mean, notice the difference, huge difference in taste.
Yeah.
To me, this one actually feels a little softer.
It's softer in the tannins almost because of all the those hillside vineyards, but it's more structured as well. Yeah.
It's Cabernet Sauvignon.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man, the king of grapes.
Yeah,
man.
I agree.
Wow. Is your barrel regime the same for both these wines?
This is just a slight bit more oak. The red blend sees about 50%. This saw about 60% new French oak.
Man, this can handle it. And how many different vineyards?
Five different vineyards in that one.
Wow.
Yeah.
How many cases?
We did about 3,000 cases of that one.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you'll be able to get this.
That one and the Sauvignon Blanc are both available at Bottle Born.
There you go.
Yeah, there we go. And of course, on how most we sell about 90% of our wines direct at aperture-sellers.com. And that's really the only way to get some of the single vineyard wines that we'll taste later on as well.
Again, we talk about mailing lists all the time.
Yeah.
You know, the allocation list is kind of what the wine club for big producers is. So if you go to his website, you can get, you know, sign up to get on the waiting list to be on only Aperture, but also Devil Proof.
Yeah, Devil Proof is completely allocated, and there's a wait list for that wine.
How long? For me.
For you? A couple minutes.
It's in the car.
Don't worry about it. It's about a year and a half to 2 years, depending
on. So get on the list, man. If you don't get on the list, you'll never get it.
Yeah.
Wow.
And Devil Proof is a great story. So we'll have to get to that, too.
Yeah.
Aperture-sellers.com. Okay, now talk about Devil Proof. What's the deal? Is that just what the vineyards are called?
Give us that little quote.
Yeah. So,
give us that little quote.
In 2012, when I came back from Argentina, I fell in love with the varietals Malbec. And I really wanted to showcase what California Malbec could do. And I started searching for a vineyard in 2010 to do a single site Malbec from. In 2011, met... Well, I've known Carol Farrell for many years, but was at Carol Farrell's vineyard, found this unique little old vine Malbec vineyard just at the plateau of her hillside vineyard there. and started taking over farming in 2012. And that was the first vintage that we made a wine from. And this was a old vine. We started dry farming it. We took out all irrigation, even throughout all the droughts that we've had.
That drives me crazy when I hear that.
Zero irrigation. And yes, to a grower, it's stressful because the vines start to look like they're struggling. The berries really start to shrink down. But what it does is really makes this incredible concentrated fruit. And from the very first vintage, I was tasting with Robert Parker, the Aperture, and I was still making the wines of Lancaster at the time.
Robert Parker.
Yeah, the little guy.
Yeah. He's an iconic, huge guy.
Yeah, truly an icon, and there will be very, he's changed the world of wine critics, certainly.
One and only.
One and only, absolutely. And one of the brilliant people in finding new brands as well. I certainly have to give him credit. When he tasted Devil Proof and really had no idea, we didn't have it in a bottle, we had no label, he tweeted that evening that it was the finest Malbec he's ever had from California and rivals the best in the world. And that was instantly how we had this. Well, I'd put up a website that evening to figure out how to capture emails. And ever since then, Devil Proof has been the highest rated Malbec in the history of California from Robert Parker, Wine Spectator, Wine Enthusiast, James Suckling, Jeb Dunnick, any critic that I've ever been able to show the wine to has all echoed his statement.
Tom, I'll let you go ahead, and then I have a question for you.
You got to give us that eat. What's that? How's that?
So Devil Proof, yeah. When I was really trying to push the limits of what Malbec could be in California, not only what was in the bottle, I wanted to push the limits of our label, which is this amazing Cuban woman smoking a cigar, black and white photo that my dad took from Cuba in the early 90s, truly one of his most famous photos. And has had this really interesting life within food and wine. Like, it's in restaurants throughout the world. If you go into Peter Michael's tasting room, she's there sitting at the tasting room with you. And he named the photo Devil Proof after a Cuban theory that he kept on hearing while he was over there, that if you live well, drink well, you're devil proof and the devil can't get you. Probably a couple other things well.
Yeah, I like that.
And that's really...
Eat well, drink well, and the devil will never get you.
Yeah, you're devil proof.
You're devil proof.
So that kind of stuck with me.
And that is classic. I love it, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Good
and,
for you.
And when people get their allocations, we limit 3 to 6 bottles, depending on 3 or 6 bottles, and they come in these custom cigar boxes that have...
I've seen that.
Yeah, yeah, with have this the Cuban stamp, the Cuban sticker that goes around the Cuban cigar boxes. We redid that, took out the tobacco fields, put a vineyard, the Republic of Devil Proof from Farrell Ranch. And now we're doing one from Rockpile Ridge, the Mortensen's family farms for us. And then when you open it up, there's a print that my father and I have signed each individual one that says live well, drink well, and you're devil proof in the photo right there.
Very cool.
Yeah. That's amazing.
That?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh.
It is Jesse Katz, winemaker at Aperture Cellars, Devil Proof Vineyards, California Wine Country. All right, we got 3 minutes left for this week's edition of California Wine Country, brought to you by Bottle Barn. Tom Simino in for Dan Berger and Jesse Katz, the winemaker at Aperture Cellars and Devil Proof Vineyards. Let's wrap this up.
We're going to wrap it up. We got to go quick.
Yeah.
There's a lot of philanthropic work that Jesse is doing as a 34-year-old young man. And one of his wines was just at auction, raised one bottle, $350,000, right, at Emeril Lagasse's.
I paid that last night at Safeway for a really good bottle of wine.
Jesse, congratulations, number one.
Thank you
so
much.
And it was a Sonoma County wine.
Yeah, the first time Sonoma County has ever had a wine that has the Guinness Book of World Records as the most expensive bottle of wine ever sold.
And that was a Malbec?
No, it was a single vineyard cab.
Single vineyard cab.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, exactly. From Alexander Valley.
Right. And you do several celebrity wines, correct?
Yeah. So I've done I've really had some fun projects. I've made the wedding wine for Jessica Biel and Justin Timberlake. We did a wine.
I was
Von
there.
Miller.
I sang at that wedding.
I thought I'd recognize you.
I was the
before.
Wedding. Singer, yeah. Hey, everybody, how you doing?
We did a special bottling for Von Miller to give to all the guests, or to all the players in the AFC West. We did a label for Tony Hawk, and the wine that set the record for most expensive bottle of wine was a specific bottle bottling of the setting wines that we did for Shep Gordon, the great Shep Gordon, the amazing guy who kind of created the identity of celebrity chefs and has managed people from Jimi Hendrix.
Great documentary that you need to see.
Supermensch. It's Supermensch. Phenomenal. Yeah. So he had three bottles left. One of them got sold to a private buyer for $350,000.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Jesse, it's been a long time since you've been in. We got to get you back.
Absolutely.
More often.
It's been a lot of fun. Thank you guys so much.
It's always so cool. Aperture Cellars, Devil Proof Vineyards. Aperture-cellars.com. You can find everything out there and check out Jesse's dad, Andy Katz, and his photography for all these years. It's an amazing story, and I love it. And thanks to Tom Simino for bringing Jesse in.
If anybody missed part of the show, they can go to the podcast.
That's right, calwinecountry.com or wherever fine podcasts are available. Subscribe, and it'll show up for free in your little thing.
This was
thing,
a great show. Jesse, thanks for coming.
My pleasure. Thank you all. This
good to
been
see
a lot
you, man.
Of fun.
Tom, we'll see you soon. Have a good night.